Welcome to Signs of Life, exploring survival of consciousness, brought to you by Forever Family Foundation, on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
I call your name, the echo is haunting, the echo is always the same. I call your name, the echo is haunting, an echo can never be changed. So I call your name.
And welcome to the gathering on Signs of Life Radio. Sorry we're a little bit late, but we're here now. This is the gathering, and this is our monthly show where we address your questions. Sometimes you email them to us, sometimes you call us. If you'd like to call in during the show, we'd love to hear from you. The number here is 888-627-6008. I don't have many announcements, if any, but I will mention that, you know, our grief retreats are sold out a year in advance. So the one that still has a few seats is July of next year in Connecticut. And I think we have 7 seats left for that. So if you're interested, if you think you'll be interested, now would be the time. And you can find that information on the website. So I guess we should get right to some questions. And by the way, I think this might be a little bit different because Melissa and Tom and myself, we came up with some questions that we didn't discuss with each other, and we're curious about what the other one thinks. But before we get to that, let me read some of them that came in. This one, came in today, and it was addressed to me, and it says, hi, Bob. I'm reading your book right now, The Medium Explosion. And in it, a sentence went by which stopped me in my tracks, which read, we must keep in mind that those no longer embodied also have free will, and thus the ability to help alter the course of direction in our physical lives. And he writes, hold on. It seems the problem on this side stems from free will. We abuse and misuse this powerful gift. And I don't want to believe that there is potential for corruption on the other side. So the struggles continue eternally. It sounds exhausting. My comments aside, would you expound upon this subject? What is known about free will on the other side? Are there any checks and balances there? We see how the embodied handle free will here. What guarantees the disembodied will not misuse their free will? Fascinating and challenging to think about. Thank you, Earl, for that question. And I agree with you that it could be a little bit unsettling to think that those in the next world have free will, but it's all about perspective. I mean, here where we get into trouble is very often free will is based upon our greed or our ego or a desire for power. Things normally associated with the physical realm. In the next realm, where you're an entity of thought, I don't believe that these such emotions and things exist. There's no incentive to make decisions based upon these things because they just are not there. So free will is very different in the realm to come. The actions that we take there, instead of being based on ego, are based upon the greater good or things like love and empathy and compassion and a desire to help others. So help others, including our loved ones, still in the physical form. So I understand your concern, but I think that it's all about perspective, and our perspective is quite different. Tom or Melissa, do you want to throw your 2 cents in on that?
I have 2 cents. Hi, Bob.
Hi.
I want to, it reminded me of some of the things we all read in that book, Testimony of Light. And I almost feel as though that period of free will within the spirit realm might occur soon after one passes. until they get sort of acclimated to where they now are and what their journey is to be. And I only, when I reference the book, it's because in it, I believe they described that all facades that we may have here pretending we're something we're not are dropped away when you cross over. So there on the other side, you may have clusters of people who were very egocentric or into wealth. And, you know, some of the items that were mentioned in the question. But I think over time, who knows, time means nothing. But who on the other side? So who knows what period of time? But I think there might be that level where you're working through some of those things.
Yeah, and I feel, I love the question, by the way. It is thought-provoking. And when I hear free will on the other side, I am drawn to a reading, a medium reading where my father came through and talked about, well, I can do this and I can do that and everything's going at 100 miles an hour. And you know, that to me is his free will. And I think it's because of the nature of what we have seen the evidence of for the other side, that it's a loving, nurturing environment. So it's a huge leap, as it may be here on this planet, when you say, well, I've got free will. Well, gosh, if you have free will, then that's going to lead to corruption. And yes, it leads a lot of people to corruption. But it's an even bigger leap on the other side, because as you mentioned earlier, there's no money, there's no greed, avarice, power, that none of that stuff that draws people to a corruption on this planet even exists, as you mentioned before. So I think free will is more that you can do things as you please, that you're not restricted. But as far as, like I say, it's a huge leap to then say, well, that can lead to corruption. I'm doubtful that that is possible on the other side.
Yeah. You know, a related thought which comes up occasionally is that if we assume, based upon what we know, that communication, all communication takes place in the next realm telepathically, so that means that all of the other people in the same realm that we're in the afterlife can hear our own thoughts, because we could hear, you know, other people's thoughts. And some people might find that a bit unsettling, thinking, well, what, wait, you know, it's quite of an invasion of privacy. And what if I don't want everybody to hear what I'm thinking, but it goes along the same lines, because we're not hiding anything, you know, there. So, you know, it's we're only thinking in physical terms, and that's why it's unsettling to us. But I think like a switch gets flipped when we're on it, on the other side. So.
And corruption, one of the key elements of corruption is that you are conning people. And as you say, you can't con anybody on the other side.
Like, right.
No.
Yeah. Here's a good question from our friends, you know, Jim and Sharon. And they said their question regards the thought that when we cross over, we are greeted by family and friends. Then we have a life review followed by atonement, and we reach a higher vibration level as our spirit grows and matures. Sometimes this growth involves reincarnation. And the question is, how did this belief system evolve? Was it evidence that was revealed through mediumship, or was it something else? And it's a good question, and there's more going on there. I mean, regarding life reviews, I mean, some people have these life reviews as they're still straddling two worlds. You know, they're not quite out of this one and they're not quite in the next. And in other people, it seems that they don't have them until they completely shed their bodies and they move to the next realm. And instead of atonement, I would call it more of a self-judgment than atonement. And the way I understand it, you know, the life review can can occur before or after we're greeted by family. And from what I've read, it's usually before. And then regarding, you know, spiritual growth, it's a slow process for some and it's fast paced for others. But the point is that everyone does progress. But the main part of the question is, how do we come up with that belief system? And I guess it's based predominantly on two sources. One, near-death experiences, because that's what a lot of experiencers, you know, tell us about how it works. And the second source of information would be channeled accounts from physical and trance mediums. And those accounts mostly occurred from years ago, you know, even a century ago. Yeah. So I think it's a good question, and I'm sure that you want to chime in on that, Tom and Melissa.
Yeah, I just, through all of this, all the study, everything that we talk about and are now putting into the belief category did come from evidence, you know, as you say, through accounts from mediums or near-death experiencers or that sort of thing. That's where we get our evidence, and the evidence, if you do enough study, the evidence creates patterns, and it's those patterns that we hang our hats on.
And even as you, I think we're perhaps thinking of too, some of the things that come through, like being in a tunnel, heading towards the light. If enough people have reported that sort of experience, you have to, I mean, if they're assuming reliable enough, but you just start to say, oh, okay, so we could put that in the true category. As far as having a life review prior to death, I was recently having a conversation with one of the facilitators at some of our retreats, Annie. And Annie had actually been a caregiver for my mom near the end of her life. And Annie recently shared with me that quite near, and we didn't know my mom was about to pass. It all happened sort of within a week. But Annie told me that my mom started to express to her regrets she had had with an interaction with one of her friends. And that doesn't typically sound like my mom to revisit, you know, things that she potentially may have, you know, made an error with. Tom's laughing because he knows my mom also.
Regret wasn't huge on her list of virtues.
But it made me think of that, and I think that's what struck Annie as well, and why she shared it with me, that she thought mom was starting to revisit moments in her life where she perhaps wished she had behaved or acted differently.
Yeah.
I agree. I think a life review can happen when, right now, if you're hale and hearty, you can have, as we sort of indicated here, that you can have your own life review, and maybe you should be doing it kind of on a semi-regular basis, just to keep you on the right path, as it were.
And make amends with people.
And make amends, right, yeah. Exactly. All the things that you regret when you can't do it anymore, you can do now. And then, of course, life review. There are people who have life reviews of lives they lived before. You know, you can go and go through a process, which I haven't done, Melissa hasn't done, but I'd be curious to try one of those.
Have you ever, Bob, past life regression?
No, I don't think I'd be a good subject for it. I don't think that I'd be able to put under, you know, hypnosis very easily. I mean, listen, there have been a lot of books written by very credible people, and, you know, that give a lot of good evidence. I mean, the scientists that we know that study past life memories of children and reincarnation tend to dismiss a lot of the past life regression studies because of that being in a very suggestive state of mind when you're under hypnosis. So they don't fully trust the information, but you can't dispute the body of evidence. So I'm open to it. I don't think I'd be, you know, most of the stuff that comes through in a past life regression is not stuff that you can identify.
Right.
So it's hard to as a research, as a discipline of research, you know, it's hard to validate, you know, what's being said. That's not to say that it's not real. It's difficult from an evidence point of view.
Yeah. You know, on two occasions I've heard, well, one was a question I had posed to a medium about my daughter, and it was, I'll just say what it was, because all during her childhood, and hopefully she's over it now, being a grown mom of two, a horrific fear of blood and needles. And this medium, you know, claimed she had died in a bloody death in a previous life. And then for my son, just his rather, again, another grown adult with children now, but he was told by a medium, a psychic medium, that I guess all mediums, we do say that, are psychic. So, but it was a mediumistic reading. However, she was referring to him in a past life, things that he had experienced that kind of led to why he is the way he is today. So neither of those had anything to do with hypnosis. So it must have been something, if they were at all valid, tapped into his spirit, or what would you think about that?
It's come up before, you know, and because people have asked questions, if we have had past lives and we're getting a medium reading, how come the medium never gives information about a life previous, you know, to this one? And, you know, part of the reason may be that if you're the sitter and you had a past lives of which you had no knowledge about, you couldn't validate any of the information because you don't remember any of it. So if the person in spirit wants to get through to you, you know, they're going to give you information that you can identify, and you just simply can't identify, information that's from a past life. That doesn't mean theoretically a medium should be able to do that, because it's your consciousness is an accumulation of many consciousnesses, assuming that you had many lifetimes. So it's always a problem that I think about it a lot, that could be. Maybe sometimes mediums do get such information, but it's not acknowledged, so it's dismissed.
Yeah.
Could be really true based on a past life, right?
Well, and I'm recalling now with this, the question I'd asked about my daughter, the medium actually had a name, came up with a name for her. And I wrote the name down on a piece of paper. I believe it wasn't in that moment that we were visiting my daughter, but soon afterwards. And I had written the name down on a piece of paper, and I had told her nothing about any of this. And I simply handed her the piece of paper, and I said, "Does this mean anything to you?" And it did not.
No. All right. Well, it could very easily might have meant something, so it was worth a shot.
Yeah.
You're listening to The Gathering on Signs of Life Radio. If you'd like to join in a conversation or you had a question, the number is 888-627-6008. I do have a question here. Do you believe the inner voice of intuition may actually be a form of telepathic communication? I would say could be. I mean, I think that your inner voice of intuition could be a communication from a discarnate entity. But you could also, on the other hand, be extracting information from an information field, a field of energy in this connected universe. So I think it could be both.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What do you have to say about that, guys?
I'm reading I actually just finished reading a book written about a woman's experience with that. And the thoughts that were coming into her head. She had recently lost her fiance and she had been in deep grief. And now anything that popped into her head, she, in her state of grief, wasn't trusting as to where is this thought coming from. But through her studies and investigation, she came to realize that it was being transmitted to her by her deceased fiance, and it actually turned into quite an interesting experience for her, because she would ask him questions and he would, it was almost what mediums do, showing her images, signs, making her do the work herself to figure out what was going on.
Actually, I like this question. If everyone were able to communicate telepathically, what would be different? I think that's exactly what the afterlife is like, where everybody does communicate telepathically. So everything would be different for reasons that we discussed earlier. Also, but just imagine if everybody could communicate telepathically in this physical world, you really couldn't gain an advantage on anybody because they know what you're thinking and they know what your motives are.
Right.
You know, so I think ultimately this physical world would be a better place if that happened or not.
I've often said I can't wait to be on the other side because my thoughts are so much deeper than whatever comes out of my mouth. So you'll all be impressed. You won't even know it's me because you're like, well, that was a deep thought. That couldn't be. Bob, can I jump in with a question?
Yeah, let's do, please.
Well, we, as you know, for many, many years, we had afterlife discussion groups. And you and I and Fran met here on Long Island, Cold Spring Harbor, and one of our members of the afterlife discussion group, Liz, has that she and I have stayed in touch and have become close friends. And she had a question that I will present for you, because I kind of feel like this is more up your alley than what Tom and I might currently know. I know we end our program every month by saying our loved ones are only a heartbeat away and science is going to prove it. Liz wants to know, we often science prove one, there is life after death. What strides has conventional science made so far in proving this theory? So, well, do you have any updates?
I wish there was, you know, new stuff, you know, coming about. I mean, most of the work is being done following up on research that was done long ago. I mean, we have the same disciplines of research that we refer to all the time. I mean, modern science has better resuscitative techniques in the medical field. So more and more people that have are being revived. And that means more and more people can talk about experiences they had when they were technically, you know, dead, according to the definition of medical science. So the pool and the body of evidence, you know, grows in that respect. But, you know, mediumship, that's been researched for 100 years. I mean, modern science has been able to show pretty definitively that some people can communicate, you know, with discarnate entities. But I don't know how far that takes us. You know, what we really need to know, and maybe that's what Liz was driving at, is how did it, you know, what is the mechanism that allows it? And because if we can identify that aspect of consciousness that allows us to do it, then we all could do it, and we could all could do it on a regular basis, and that's ultimately, you know, the goal. Scientists are trying to figure out if there are any substances such as DMT or areas of the brain that facilitate non-physical communication. And that's an area that has a lot of promise. And that's why a lot of scientists are doing brain mapping of people like mediums and meditators to see differences in the brain, which areas light up and stay dark when they're engaged in spirit communication. Because maybe we can identify something that, you know, that will help us. But ultimately, you know, I mean, I don't know what the future holds. You know, I mean, I wish we'd go in different directions, but I don't personally think that we've made a tremendous amount of progress other than validating what we already knew, you know. Mm-hmm. And then when you think about it, it's hard to come up with. I mean, we're talking about a concept of that we're not going to really truly know till we go there, you know. So, yeah. So I don't know. Sometimes, you know, sometimes I get frustrated with the state of you know, of science, and you wonder if it, you know, and then others will say, well, maybe that's because, you know, we're not meant to know, you know. But I don't buy that. I don't. Mm. I think that we are meant to know, and that's maybe one of our part of the search for meaning in life is to recognize that we are part of this connected universe. And we always talk about how the ancients originally, we've had that knowledge, you know, and now it's kind of atrophied out of us. So,
well, you know, science has been very physical world base, you know, physics itself comes from physical. And it's only recently, and I'm talking recently in the last 60 years, that quantum physics has come into development. And I believe that quantum physics hold a lot of the answers that we're looking for. And so as that field of science progresses, we may get more answers than we have now.
Yeah, I agree. Because, you know, this entanglement, you know, concept seems to be very spiritual, you know, sounding. So that may be the answer. You know, ultimately, even despite what we've been saying all these years, you know, and that science is going to prove it, it may be that it's the personal experiences that people have is going to be the ultimate proof, as opposed to a scientific discovery. Because, you know, when more and more and more and more people have these experiences, you know, more frequently, and they talk about it more frequently, and it's openly discussed, that'll open up a lot of different, you know, channels, you know. So I think that, you know, direct personal contact will have a lot more to do with it. You know, I fantasize about, and I see it within the realm of possibility, of scientists coming up with a method of EVP that's not one or two word sentences, but a clear, direct communication. And I have my own theories about that. You know, if we could map out an imprint of our own consciousness, you know, on the theory that would stay the same when our consciousness goes, you know, survives and goes to the other realm, there could be a match if you had a device that could actually, you know, store and plug in that imprint, you know. So, you know, maybe that's where we'll make strides in the future. But other than that, I'm just going to rely on, you can rely on me too. When I go, I'll help you along, and you could do the same for me.
I hope so. And
vice versa.
Yes. And also there's the, that we're in a new age now, the Mayan calendar that ended on 2012 has, you know, I don't know what it means necessarily, but other than the fact that it did end, you know, people were waiting there at the stroke of midnight to see everything change. And of course, it's not going to change like that. I equate it to the tides coming in. You can sit there on a beach and you can watch, and you know the tide's coming in, and then you know it's coming out, but Do you actually observe that, other than knowing that it's happening, other than waiting long enough to see that, oh yeah, there's way more beach to see? Well, we're in that tidal pool right now where the old age has ended and the new one is there. So the tide has hit its high tide and now it's going the other way, or it actually feels more that it's hit the low tide at this point. And now we're going, the tide is coming in with a new age, and there is speculation and many different cultures that believe it's the new age of enlightenment or awareness. And that I picture that as being that we will open up those channels in the brain that existed when we were children that allowed us to communicate and with the other side, with the other dimension. And while that was weaned out of us as we adjusted to this physical world, I think more and more people won't wean out of it. And the awareness of signs and spiritual neighbors, if you will increase to a point where we'll all believe, because we'll all be experiencing it as a
yeah,
humanity, hopefully, unless we destroy ourselves first.
You know, Bob, yeah. It was interesting when you added the part about EVP, and I'm guessing you meant almost like a DNA, an imprint, like a recognizable something to know. Because Liz asked another question regarding EVP, and she wondered what is the best way to explore electronic voice phenomena, she adds, without turning it into an electronic Ouija board. And I wasn't certain if she meant by that opening the door for anybody and anything, but what's your take on that question?
Well, I don't know. One of the beautiful things about EVP is apparently the ease in which you can do it. So, I mean, it doesn't take a lot of expertise. The more I learn about it, the more I'm convinced that we'll call it the experimenter, the person that's doing the recording, has a lot to do with the process. You know, I mean, some people, we both know people that get EVP on a regular basis. And some of these researchers, I mean, we did a webinar with Sonia Rinaldi, and it's unbelievable. The EVPs and the clarity of the messages, it's astounding. And so, you know, I ask the question, I mean, do you see yourself as acting as a medium, you know, when you're doing the EVP? And they say, no, but clearly there's some sort of a synchronization that's going on between the person's consciousness and coming through. Because other people that we know, and we tried it ourselves, right? But there are people that try it for a year or two, you know, don't get anything, and then eventually they do. You know, the other end of it, what you're asking about is there something, is there maybe a portal by which, you know, evil can, you know, come through, like a lot of people think about. I don't think it's any different than the mediumship reading. I mean, we know that that doesn't happen in medium readings. The mediums tell us that's because they surround themselves with light or ask their guides that for only good information to come through. I suppose you could do the same thing, you know, when you're getting messages. But, you know, in an EVP, you're usually setting your intention towards one specific person in spirit. You know, and that conduit is set up. So personally, I mean, I wouldn't even consider that I would get somebody communicate. I'd just be happy if anybody communicated with me. Yeah. You know, so I don't have no fear of negative, you know, energy coming through that way.
I'm sorry, Tom. I'm not quite sure if that is what Liz was indicating, but I agree. And we've always, not that we've had too many experiences with it, but the not seeking it, but it appears, is meaningful to us.
Yeah, and when you make a good point about yeah, the whole channel of communication, the person doing the sending out the intention and then collecting the information. My experience, the best EVP that I've seen personally comes from our friend who's a medium. You know, yeah. Janet has had great yeah. success. So maybe that has something to do with it.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, our loved ones in spirit, I mean, look at it as an opportunity, you know, we call it a conduit, you know, to get through. Because, you know, remember, sometimes people get messages and they don't know what they are. Right. They get recordings and they don't recognize it, but then they play it for a friend or a relative and they say, oh, that's for me. And they recognize, you know, who it is. So I think that our loved ones can get very, very creative and they see pathways that we don't see.
Do you recall, Bob, I know Dave Kane had a significant one from his son, Nick. Were they experimenting or how did it come to them? That.
Well, in Dave's case, the most striking one was through a medium, you know, where the medium had said to Dave's wife, Joanne, you know, that Nikki, Dave's son, was going to come through very soon, you know, and in an unusual way. And Joanne dismissed that because that sounds like just general stuff, right? And they went home because Joanne recorded the session. And when they went home and played the recording, as if on cue, as soon as the medium said that Nikki's going to communicate with you very soon, you hear clearly, you know, hi, Mom, it's Nick. You know, so, you know, what do you say about that? You know, I mean, if you, you know, I don't know how the medium, even if trickery was involved, how they could, you know, fake something like that on a recording tape where you don't hear it, as you know, in EVP, when it's while it's being recorded, you only hear it afterwards. So that's incredible. And the thing that we all, I think why we're all so interested and excited about EVP is that it's one of the few things that we here in the physical world can experience with our own physical senses. Yeah. You know, we didn't read about it in a book. It's not coming through a third party. You know, I mean, this is, you know, I mean, I don't know how you explain it, but it's it can be tremendously helpful, I think, in grief and, you know, transformative. That's an area that I think has a lot of future, you know, to it. And as more of these great researchers are stepping up.
Yeah, I took my mom years ago to get a reading from Teresa Caputo, and she is notorious for always having a little cassette deck there, and she records all of the readings, and then she'll give you the tape at the end of the reading. And the set, and it was my father coming through, and she said, he just told me he's gonna mess with the tape. And so I thought, okay. And what I used to do, because cassettes were on their way out at that time, I would bring my cassette home, and then I would transfer it to a CD that we could listen to in the car. And anybody remember CDs?
We have an old car.
Yeah. But sure enough, I'm listening back to the reading, and she says, oh, and he says he's going to mess with the tape. And then the very next thing is the tape starts going like,
yeah.
So, I mean, really, how could you possibly know that? The whole, we're talking an hour-long reading, and only 3 seconds of it were warped, and that was just when she said he's going to mess with the tape.
Yeah. You know, you just made me think it has nothing to do with what we're talking about, but when you were talking about cassettes, like a guy knocked on the door today who was an insurance adjuster for the insurance company that insures the condo that I'm staying in. So he wanted to, you know, checking for damage. And, you know, of course, he had, as all people do, especially insurance adjusters, they have these digital cameras, and they could take 150 photos and, you know, in a minute or two. So I said, well, you know, isn't that amazing? I said, what did people have to do, you know, when there was no digital? You know, and he just looked at me and he says, yeah. I said, well, you know, I'll tell you what we used to do when I started We used Polaroid cameras. He had no idea what I was talking about. And he had,
wow.
He never heard a Polaroid. He never heard of a camera that could do that. You know, he thought it was amazing, you know. So it just shows you, like, something from that he never heard of from the past, he thought was cool, you know.
You'll see if the patent is run out on that and then introduce it again as a new.
Yeah, yeah. A good idea. It was a question that came in that, you know, most religious people have blind faith. What's wrong with having blind faith in life after death? Nothing's wrong with it. You know, just whatever, you know, some people need more and some people don't. You know, I guess that's why religion, you know, flourishes and is important, you know, to many people, because they just, you know, have faith in a greater source. But other people say, well, show me, you know, I want to see some evidence. So yeah. I know we tend to look, when we're talking about an afterlife, we people like me need evidence, but I talk to others and they have an inner knowledge and they don't really care about science or evidence. And,
yeah. We're trying to keep everything we're doing here, especially since we're broadcasting it to other people, to make sure that we're not dealing in conjecture and speculation, that we're just relating the evidence that we have seen or read about.
Yeah. I know somebody once said to me, well, you know, what if you're wrong? And, well, you know, what if there's nothing? And I said, well, I guess we'll never know, right? I mean, we can't judge. And when it's not as if we're going to say, oh, I was wrong. I mean, because then if nothing existed, we don't exist. But we all don't feel that way. And as Tom alluded to, we don't feel that way based upon the experiences and the evidence that we've had and seen. So I think that's important. I mean, I think it's important for everybody not to simply take things at face value. It's a lot more meaningful and profound when, you know, there's evidence, you know, behind it, you know. Then on the other hand, you could talk about science and evidence all you want, but if you have one of these unbelievable personal communications, you know, that trumps everything, you know.
Yeah.
People that had near talked to somebody that's had a near-death experience, you know, they don't care about, they already know the evidence, you know, they've seen it and experienced it, you know, or somebody that has a dream visitation where they're kissing and talking, you know, with their loved one, or somebody sees their loved one at the foot of the bed, you know, see it with their own eyes. So talk to those people, and, you know, science is immaterial, you know, they personal evidence takes precedence over academic research, you know, in those cases.
And I also think in the big picture, it's not necessarily what you know or what is you believe, but what you do with that information, that it's you know, first of all, one thing is what I've seen at grief retreats, when people get an inkling that this is what we're saying is true, it changes their lives. I've seen people completely do a turnaround in their grief process, which is fantastic. So true or not, it has a therapeutic value. And then also personally, knowing that, believing that we, our soul continues after this brief time of physical existence, and that we're an eternal being, it makes me live my life differently. You know, I try not to do harm to anybody, and you know, to send out the love and the positive energy, and whether I'm wrong, as you say, if I get to the pearly gates and they say, well, that's it, you're done, then I'm done. But the time leading up to that, I've lived a better life as far as I can tell.
I was thinking, you guys are making me think, if we made a pros and a cons list about belief, believing that there's an afterlife, what would you even put on the con side? I can list hundreds of things for the pros, you know, live a better life, live without fear of death.
Yeah. Well, some of the, you know, so even people that are, you know, deeply religious, you know, might have some cons with the way religion sometimes portrays what the afterlife is like. You know, somebody says, wait a second, I'm going to be living in eternity, you know, floating on a cloud. I mean, where's the excitement? Where's the interest? You know, where's the, you know, I mean, that doesn't seem very appealing, you know, but if you believe that there's learning and excitement and music and art and all with tones and music that you've never heard before, that you can actually taste the music and, you know, colors that are vibrant that you could talk to, you know, it's supposedly, and that's why I think that some people have synesthesia in the physical world. They're getting a view of what the next world is like. You know, I believe that in the next world, certainly all our physical senses that we have here are merged together, but probably a huge number of other senses that we couldn't understand come into play. So,
and it's great because it will have nothing to do with politics, nothing to do with money. It will be so pure.
Yeah, I mean, I'll still manifest a pizza once in a while, or a lobster, or something like that. But you know, just for the kick of it. I mean, think about, you know, we talk about people in the next world being able to manifest things by thought. So, like, I was pondering the other day. So I hate roller coasters. You know, I mean, I like the idea of it, but my stomach comes out of my mouth on that descent. You know, I can't even handle it. So the first thing that I'm going to do in the afterlife is I'm going to manifest a roller coaster. And my theory will be that it'll be with the exhilaration, but without the bodily negative effects. Yeah. I don't have a stomach, you know, that's gonna, so it'll be just pure emotion and a pure high, you know. I mean, who knows? I think we'll be able to do stuff like that.
So we should start bucket lists for the afterlife. Top of your bucket list is
a roller
coaster.
Yeah, what are you going to do when you get over there?
It's true. We only talk about bucket lists, what we're going to do before we get there, right?
Yeah,
just thinking of possibilities after we get there. It's a good idea. I like that. Bucket list for the afterlife. that could be a workshop endeavor at one of the grief retreats, right?
That's true.
Yeah. And, and also I have to throw this in, which I do often, is that the enormous amount of accounts that we get from the near-death experience, the people who have gone through that, that say that they were annoyed when they were revived, that they had to come back to this world because what they got a glimpse of was so magnificent that we can't even imagine it here.
Mm-hmm. You know, there was a question that came in during one of the other, you know, shows, and I don't know if we ever got to it. The question was, do you think that mediums are becoming more or less evidential as time moves on? That's an interesting question. I never really thought about it. I know that after reading so many books about the mediums, the great mediums in history, and the incredible, you know, communications and evidence that they did, I always used to say to myself, why aren't there more of these mediums? Like, where have they all gone? You know, but, you know, on the other hand, we've all seen, you know, mediums today that are in, you know, incredibly evidential. So I don't think that they're either more or less evidential. It's just different, you know, than it was before.
Yeah. And if you're talking about history and you go, oh, well, there was that medium from the 1800s, that was really great. And then, oh, there's a medium from the 1930s. You're talking a handful. And I can give you a handful of mediums right now that are as evidential as you couldn't be any more evidential. So
yeah, the only difference now is the doubt that people have in the general public, only because of the availability of information that's out there, you know, with Facebook and, you know, and Google and everything else. Whereas if you were sitting in a seance in, you know, 1910, you couldn't research anything, so you could research in libraries and records, you know, way after the fact, but nobody's clicking on, you know, a computer to find out instant information. So that just makes it harder on the really good mediums today, you know.
And also, you know, those seances and whatnot from 100 years ago were physical mediumship, which was more spectacular in its awe-inspiring, but then found out that a lot of them were faking it. They, you know, a good magician can recreate a successful seance. And we have a handful of physical mediums out there now, and not all of them are real. You know, I mean, they're
fake. Yeah, it's like everything else. The things that are, I mean, we mentioned before how we get the evidence, and one of the ways was through these trance mediums that go into trance. And of course, then you always question, could it be, are they really in trance? Is this really person in spirit, or you know, could it be the subconscious or a conscious effort on the part of the medium, you know? But yeah, you know, sometimes the information is so intricate and sophisticated, you know, that it's hard to believe that the mediums could be. The most fascinating case, and I forget the medium involved, it was a medium that was doing automatic writing, and she was being dictated from two different discarnates, and she had a pen in the left hand and a pen in the right hand.
Wow.
You know, with paper in front of each, and she was taking dictation from spirit simultaneously with both hands, you know. And it was legible, and it was meaningful, and it made sense, and it could be validated, you know. You know, wait, some of it could later on. So go explain that, you know. <That's>, you know, incredible stuff. Well, I think that about ends us. Did you have anything else you wanted to add? I think we got about another minute or so. But
well, I do want you to end this with the prayer. Do you still have access to that, Bob?
I do. You know, when I evacuated, when the hurricane came, and I grabbed a couple of papers, that global peace prayer was in my folder, and that's one of the only things I have left. So yes, I can read it. And this was a prayer that was given to us by Dr. Claude Swanson, who's now on the other side. And his theory was that, you know, by everybody putting their intention out there, we could change, you know, the world. So he wrote, "Let us, as one consciousness, give our energy of loving thought by praying like this: to love one another, to treat others as we would like to be treated, to forgive others and return love for hate, kindness for anger, to spread this feeling to everyone, to our fellow man, as well as the earth and its environment."
And I'd like to say, and I truly do believe, that our loved ones are only a heartbeat away.
And eventually, science is going to prove it.
Okay, we changed that a bit, but it's very apropos to the topic. Thank you. Thanks to everybody that joined us tonight. Have a good week, and we'll talk to you down the road.
Take care now. Good night.
Bye-bye.